It is Ask the Mayor, and we find ourselves in Bloomington for this week's episode. Mayor Hamilton with us. Again, we really appreciate taking time out of your busy day to talk to us for a little bit.
Of course, Joe. Always welcome. Good to see you.
We just are following your Facebook Live announcement with Mayor Linup from Columbus. It's a joint endeavor that has to do with the Trades District and Dimension Mills, which actually opens in just a couple weeks.
That's right.
So can you tell us, just maybe in a nutshell, for those that may have missed that announcement, what this is all about?
Sure. I was really happy. Mayor Linup from Columbus and I joined with Cindy Fry from their chamber, Pat East from the mill, to announce a collaboration that we're doing together. Columbus and Bloomington joining together to raise $500,000 each to make $1 million that will then bring another $1.5 million into our communities to support the growing tech entrepreneurial economy, and doing it together, which is really interesting. We reached out to Columbus and said, hey, you know, we're each a small city. What if we do this together, create some more synergies? There are deep, long manufacturing history there. We, of course, have IU and the medical and life sciences and Crane and other things here. So I'm really pleased that we're working together so closely. We'll be sharing the revenue. We'll be sharing the entrepreneur in residence, who's kind of a mentor. And it's a three-year agreement. And I really look forward to our communities collaborating more closely.
You think about Columbus, Bloomington, with Nashville in between. Yeah. You know, they're not necessarily side by side; a couple of counties away. How does this benefit both cities? Why would Columbus want to be part of something that's in a Bloomington tech-based firm?
Well, I think it's really about trying to link our people and our cultures and our economy. We're both part of the greater Indianapolis economy in a way. But each an hour south. We both are really, if you think about it, international cities, different from the size of our city. Us with IU and, of course, Cook and other international connections. Them with their long history with Cummins and Japanese plants and others. So these two cities with a lot of international connections and with a future that depends upon the new economy. I mean, we've got to see entrepreneurial activity and new companies growing and existing companies growing. And I think we both felt like there's strength in numbers, if you will. We have different feels, different vibes, different cultures. You talk to the cities different times, but that diversity is good too, I think, to kind of spice up their tech engineers maybe with some of Bloomington's spirit and vice versa. And we're both, I think, very pleased to do this linkage. I would also say, I think each community has families that work in both places. There are a lot of people who go back and forth on 46 who go from Bloomington to Columbus or vice versa, and this just creates a more formal relationship.
Well, and this is exciting because I believe if the date hasn't changed, October 31st will be the grand opening for Dimension Mills.
So the mill opens for business. We have an event on the 31st, but the big event is on November 15th. A couple weeks after that, we'll be having kind of the grand opening celebration. We will cut a ribbon on October 31st. Co-work will be moving in, and a bunch of entrepreneurs will be getting there, banging into the doors and checking everything there. But November 15th will be the big celebration of the mill.
So this is a really big deal because in some ways you could say this really kind of kicks off this whole area that's sit vacant for so long. Do you see it's hard to look ahead, but you want to look ahead, don't you, and see more announcements and more things coming to that area?
We do. You know, I inherited, as I came into this job, the Trades District was an idea. It had been sitting still for a while. This is a big, big step in activating not just the building of the mill, which is a beautiful place and it's exciting and people will enjoy it, but it is activating the people and the tech firms and the entrepreneurial companies of Bloomington to have more of a place, and activating the Trades District. You know, we've got the Pedcor housing development that's underway. We have the mill will be opening. We have TASS's planning their investment, and we're talking to others about coming into the Trades District. So it's an exciting beginning.
I wanted to move on to the convention center. I believe you did sign the new memorandum of understanding Friday. Is that
yes, I did.
True.
Yeah.
So now everybody seems to be on the at least on the same page and can move forward. Is that a true statement?
Yes, we are now all aligned, city, county, and we've got a 9-member private mixture of public and private folks to do this work. The big step we're now all aligned on is to pick an architect. We need to engage an architect to do the work with us and with the community to really look at what should this be like. So I'm pleased that we're moving forward and the goal is to identify an architect if we can by the end of this year.
Last I heard, I think there were 7 architects. Have you had any update now? And I know that it's only been a few days since this has started to move forward again, but anything new on that process?
What we're doing right now is trying to pick the date at which the group of 9 will go from 7 to a smaller, undetermined number of architectural firms that we will invite back for a second visit, if you will. We had 7 terrific applicants, and we need to narrow that down so we can make our choice.
How will your office and then the county move forward when you get to that point of the hotel developer?
Well, I think that'll be determined. I think the first step right now is to get this the nine folks together. They will recommend an architect, and then the city will engage that architect because it's the city revenue that will support the construction of the convention center expansion. So we will engage an architect, and as that architect is brought on, I think we'll then kind of naturally start looking at, okay, where does the convention center best go? Where does the hotel best go? Who should we be talking to? And that will, I think, naturally evolve through that 9-member commission.
I wanted to touch upon the budget too. I believe it passed.
Yes, it
correctly.
Did.
So there are 14 new positions. And I think maybe that was what I felt like maybe. I know there's a lot of things you probably would want to talk about, but I feel like that might be the storyline of this year's budget. Can you talk a little bit about those positions and what they will do for the city?
Sure. I won't go through them all one by
sure.
one, but
yeah, yeah.
That's we have about 700 employees, so that's about a 2% increase in terms of numbers of employees. Most of them are actually in public safety. We have a few dispatchers. The dispatch system is sorely stressed, and we need to make sure we take care of our people who are answering the 911 calls 24/7. We've got several investments in the police department, including the first ever social worker. We're actually going to have a full-time social worker in the police department, and 2 more what we might call downtown resource officers, but a kind of a variation on them that will be neighborhood resource officers who are not badged officers, but are focused on connection to the community and neighborhoods. We're also adding, it's actually a change of a position to an after-hours ambassador. This is a new position. We've looked around the country and the world, and this was a recommendation straight out of the Safe Civil Task Force that said the city ought to have somebody who's representing the city, say from 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. when a lot happens in our city, and we don't really have city staff on scene. A few other positions scattered throughout the city as we're improving services in public works, in information technology, where things are always changing quickly. But that's the bulk of it.
The HT, of course, did a lot of reporting, good reporting on the budget. And it was interesting that there was a line that said that you look at the budget as objective rather than line items. Which is a new approach. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. And it's some of this is kind of budget geek stuff, but budgets are super important. I mean, they are where we set our policies and where we put our values into place by how we spend our money. And one of the things in public budgets is they're often just totally inscrutable. They're very technical, and they divide things by line item points, 1 through 4 and others. And what we've changed with this budget is what we call activity budgeting or program budgeting. So just to take an example, in the streets department now, versus what it used to be, in the street department now, you can see how much do we spend to pave streets, period. It shows you the staff, the supplies, all that stuff put together. In the old days, you could never figure out how much we spend to pave streets, or in the parks department. How much do we spend on the pools each summer? Or how much do we spend on the golf course each summer? So we're trying to focus on activities. It could be how much do we spend on inspecting our rental housing in the city, those kinds of things. So how much do we spend on the fire department, for example? How much do we spend on preventing fires? How much do we spend on responding to fires? And it's really a way to try to make the budget more accessible to all of us to see what we're spending our money on.
Let's talk about that business survey that was taken, I believe, by about 800 business owners. And the results, at least from the reports in the HT, I have to admit I don't have it in front of me, but were negative. Many about local government policies, processes, the transparency. There were a number of things. Is this something that kind of came to a surprise to you when you saw the results?
Not really. I would characterize it a little differently, perhaps. I mean, first, we do a city survey every couple years, scientifically, where we send it out randomly and we get a statistically valid sample back, and that's really important to say, how do you feel about safety? How do you feel about parks? How do you feel about sanitation? Those kinds of things. This was a survey done, I think it was sent to 800, they maybe got 100 back or something like that from businesses. And on the one hand, you had a response that said 90% of the businesses are very happy and intend to continue here. On the other hand, you had about half the businesses who said, I don't know if I would tell another business person to start in Bloomington. Now, I didn't know if part of that was I don't want a competitor to come to town, but it is an issue. Look, I've been government, state government. It is not unusual to have people say, I wish government would stop telling me what to do. Until somebody has something happening that they don't like, and then they want government to stop somebody else doing something that they don't like. It's really good and important for us to listen, to work together, city, county, business sector, chamber of commerce, to say, how do we grow jobs well in Bloomington? You can get simplistic about it. Here's one example I used thinking about this, is a sign ordinance. So we have a sign ordinance in Bloomington that limits what kinds of signs businesses can do. Most of the people in Bloomington, I think, would say that's a good thing because we don't want wild and crazy big signs blowing up our community all the time. An individual business may not be happy about that because it doesn't let them do the exact sign they want to do. On the other hand, if the seven businesses next to them were doing the signs, they wouldn't be happy either. So it's a balance, and it's important to keep talking and listening and making sure. You know, one of the first things I always say, thinking about Bloomington, is how do we grow good jobs? And working together to make sure we have opportunities for everybody in Bloomington to have a good job is really important.
I wanted to mention this too, that I talked to a small business tech startup business on the square about a year ago, and asked, why are you in Bloomington? He goes, well, because it's Bloomington, you know. But then right. He says, there's a point that might not be enough to keep me here. So is that something that the government also here is looking at, that balance, you know, of when is it too much, and how do we keep Bloomington, but yet not tip the scales the other way?
It all is a balance, Joe. I mean, it has been for 200 years, and it will continue to be. I mean, we've had these issues in Bloomington. I'm sure when the first mud streets were turned to cobblestone, there were people saying, wait a minute, why are you making me put cobblestones out? Or when we added sidewalks, or when we require trees to be put in when you make businesses. And it is all a balance. And I remember my old boss, Frank O'Bannon, who became the governor, he was lieutenant governor, reminded us, you know, the main reason companies locate or expand is it's because it's where their people want to be. And that's ultimately, Bloomington wants to be the community where people want to live. And we'll be okay if we continue to be a community where people want to live and grow and raise a family.
We have a few questions before we leave here today. Cheryl writes in about the UDO. She says it was her sad experience during the free speech time at council meetings, planned commissions, that the commissions completely ignored all meaning of institutional zoning and then backed planning directors to allow them to do what they wanted to do in illegally zoning many properties. So her question is, what assurance as a city do we have that all this talk about the UDO is not just fluff and that people, leaders, will follow the new UDO?
Well, the Unified Development Ordinance, the UDO, is basically the city zoning. And we are way overdue. When I came into office, it should have been redone already, but we're now redoing the Unified Development Ordinance. It comes after the comprehensive plan, which was adopted last year. It is a very public process, and that means it's a very messy and controversial process. There are definitely many different views about how this ought to be done. I can absolutely assure you that the people, both in the administration and then through the plan commission and through the city council, pay attention to what people say. Now, there is no UDO that will please everyone. This is a balance, too, between deciding what we want in the built environment, how dense, how tall, what should be done where, what are the requirements when you're doing a building, what does it need to look like. All those things are built into the UDO, and it's a really important conversation, and we listen to all the voices and then try to reach an accommodation that will move the city forward as best we can.
And the point for some of those meetings is to also hear different things. Not the UDO will never always hit every single instance as well, right? And that's what those meetings are for?
Well, the development of the UDO is a long public process set out by statute in many ways, how we have to do it. And people can comment on it at meetings. They can certainly call online and phone in and give comments on that UDO. Once the UDO is adopted, the design is that drives most decisions. You're right that particular developments, particular buildings can sometimes say, hey, I don't quite fit what you designed here. Can I get an exemption or a waiver? And that means another process to go to Plan Commission or the Board of Zoning Appeals. But that we hope that's the minority of cases, because the zoning is meant to kind of let people know what's good and then let them go forth and do it.
We also had three questions regarding the scooters. You may
really?
Have seen them around town.
Yes, I have. I've been on a scooter or two myself.
And so. Oh, you were on one.
Oh, yes. I've ridden them several times.
Yeah. Do you like them?
I do. Yeah. I think. Look, I get a lot of questions about scooters. They've arrived in the hundreds over the last few weeks. We didn't invite them. They just come. I remind people, they are a mobility option. They can be abused or used well like any other mobility option, like a car or like a bike or anything else. It's going to take some getting used to. I do think they add to the mix of what you can do in Bloomington. You can now not only take a cab, but a Lyft or an Uber. You can take a Pace bike if you don't have your own bike. Of course, we encourage you to use your own bike, but you can do a rental bike if you want. Now you can take a Bird or a Lyft scooter. Just this morning, I was at a meeting on campus. I didn't want to drive on campus. I had to get back to my office quickly for another meeting. A scooter was the best option. I just jumped on a scooter in 7 minutes I got from the auditorium to the City Hall. I like to walk, but that would have taken me 20 minutes. So I made my meeting. It gives me an option. Now, we got some issues to deal with, making sure the sidewalks are kept clear, making sure people operate them safely. Don't speed. You should be on the streets or on a bike lane or on a path when you're in a scooter, not on the sidewalk. And we're going to be working with that, working with people. But overall, I think we'll work our way through this, and they're adding another mobility option for town.
So I think you hit a lot of what Rocky sent in from email, but I'll emphasize one more of her question was, when will Bloomington get some regulations written and enforced regarding the electric scooters?
So we're talking with both Bird and Lime, the companies, to encourage / insist that they get good behavior from their folks. We've seen improvements in where some of the scooters are parked. That's been an issue to make sure as they're placed back out in the community in the morning that they're done systematically and well. We appreciate input on that. In terms of riding, figuring out how to enforce the sidewalk, they're not legal on the sidewalk right now. It's an enforcement and frankly an etiquette question too. And I encourage myself, if I see somebody riding on the sidewalk, I'll say, excuse me, you should be in the street. That's okay. We don't have to rely on police officers to do all this. If I see something parked that's in an inappropriate way, I can pick it up and move it. It's a mobility option. You know, climate change matters. Climate change is really important. Learning how we can get around different ways from big two-ton vehicles burning gas is a good thing. But we've got to get etiquette better, and we've got to get enforcement, and we'll be working on that. And we appreciate the continued input, and please ride safely when you do so. Wear a helmet, go on the bike lanes and on the street.
And I'll say, I just want to mention Laura had a similar question too. So Laura, I hope that answers your question. One more, a little different from Jared. He wanted to know if you had any thoughts on what the city will do with the scooters come winter and there's snow and ice and maybe three feet of snow. Where do these scooters, what happens to them?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think they come with chains and snow tires. Certainly there are going to be some days, just like your bike is tough to use, it's going to be tough to use a scooter. We'll see. You know, this is a learning experience. The other thing I like to remind people is it's a good thing we're a city where Lime and Bird want to invest and bring millions of dollars of transportation options to us. We didn't spend a dime to get all this option here. Same with Pacebike. Now we need to regulate it, I agree with that. We need to make sure it's done well, but these options were not around 2 years ago, and this is a good thing to create more options. And drivers, be careful. You know, we want to protect pedestrians, bicyclists, scooters, and those who use either walk or bike or scoot, you know, be careful too.
That was all I had, but was there anything that you would like to add, anything new that we don't know yet that you'd like to announce today?
Well, I do want to give a shout out to our Parks Department, Joe. Just this year, we competed with every Parks Department in the country in a city our size, from 75,000 to 150,000, and we were selected as the best Parks Department in the country. And Paula McDevitt and her crew applied. They were selected. It was kind of like being at the Oscars. You didn't know if you were going to get it. You're sitting in the audience, and it was a big shout, and I'm really proud. I know the city is so proud of our parks and trails, and it was nice to be recognized at the national level that way. And I should note that's our second time winning this prize, which is really unusual for a city like us. And we won it about 10 years ago, and now we won it again. And it just, you know, we invest in our parks. We love our parks. We got a new park coming.
I was going to say, that really is making progress. I drive by it every day to work, and the progress they're making is really impressive.
We're not stopping.
No.
We keep going.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Joe.